The government-wide improper payments rate jumped 14% during the last fiscal year to more than $124 billion. The Office of Management and Budget's working on a new reporting matrix for agencies to figure out who and what is responsible for the growth. Danny Werfel's director of Boston Consulting Group and former controller at the Office of Management and Budget, former acting commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. Danny, it's great to talk to you and have some context based on your experience at OMB. I called you earlier in the program the improper payments warrior for the Obama administration earlier on. As you read these numbers that the Government Accountability Office submitted to Congress in their estimate for improper payments, what are your thoughts about the growth and what we're seeing there? Thanks for coming on today.
That's my pleasure, Francis. And, you know, I'll add to my bio a little bit and say I actually I don't know if I'd use the word warrior, but I was ran improper payments coordination for the government for the Bush administration as well. And so I've been there since the beginning when the Improper Payments Information Act was actually first enacted way back in 2002. And so I've watched this journey over time. And you know, there are, you know, some moments in time where the growth has slowed a bit, the growth in improper payments, but they've tended to grow each year, and there's a couple of different reasons for that. One is the outlays have grown. So, you know, the more Medicare payments that go out the door, the more Medicaid payments, et cetera, the higher the improper payment dollars are going to be. The other thing is that when we first started in improper payments, back in 2002, I think we only reported improper payment measurements for roughly 17 programs because we hadn't yet figured out where all the improper payments lurked within the government. And you go through this process of reviewing each and every program and activity to try to figure out, is it high risk for improper payments or not? And each year, you know, you get better and better at finding those programs, and the measurements can tend to grow. So this number, you know, whether it's $40 billion when we first started, now it's up way up over $100 billion. It's obviously a big problem, but one of the reasons why it grows is because the government's more comprehensively finding them.
Yeah, it strikes me that part of the problem is the old known unknowns cliche that we've heard now a lot in government is we have more of an awareness, more transparency into where the potential for improper payments exists because, you know, you mentioned looking at the high risk, the programs that are at high risk for improper payments first, but low risk for improper payments doesn't mean zero risk. So there could still be some there as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that you know, that you have mixed feelings about when the government issues a report like this. And on the one hand, you know, it's encouraging that the government has a program like this where they're actively mining all the payments, reviewing, auditing, sampling to try to figure out where the errors are coming, and then they report publicly, you know, this inventory of where all the mistakes are being made. And so on the one hand, it's a real healthy thing the government does in terms of taking that self-assessment and putting it out there for greater accountability, and really kind of having an honesty about some of the challenges that we see in government implementation. But obviously, the other side of the equation is it can be somewhat depressing as a taxpayer to realize, you know, how much money is not going where it's intended to go.
Well, and that's why I think the context is important. My colleague Nicola Grisco reports on federalnewsradio.com that your former colleague Mike Wetklow at the Office of Federal Financial Management said back in September at an AGA conference, I think we're at the point where we need to take improper payments to the next level. Compliance is really helpful, but we need to move the debate, the discussion, to things other than compliance if we want to make progress. What kind of information, in your view, Danny, would move the improper payments discussion to that next level that Mike's talking about there?
Yeah, and I work closely with Mike, and, you know, I go to sleep better at night knowing that Mike's on the job there because he's so good and so passionate about better government and better financial management. I think he's absolutely right. And, you know, I think one of the ways to move to the next level is, you know, we've been talking about the fact that our measurements get better, we find more improper payments, and it's true. We are we're better today than we were a year ago or 5 years ago in terms of how to evaluate programs for risk of improper payments, and then once we measure them, really understanding their root causes. But what I don't think we've done a good enough job yet is then taking that information and really, you know, kind of figuring out where the highest impact corrective actions are going to be in terms of driving those dollars down, and really establishing a different set of priorities. And let me explain what I mean by that. If you look at your improper payment total, you can start to figure out a couple of different areas of where you can have impact and where, you know, you're going to have to rely on something else to drive impact. So, for example, some of the errors are just inherent in the complex design of the program. And really, in order for there to be change and the right in return on investment, you know, we have to work with Congress to rethink the design of those programs. Versus some of the error is not really, what's not really driving it is the design of the program more than it is we're not being aggressive enough, for example, in some type of review process or the use of data. And what I'd love to see going forward is a much different scorecard for improper payments, where we're really kind of getting into a more granular level and saying, for this, you know, for X billion dollars in improper payments, this percentage we're really going to put on the congressional scorecard, where we have to work with Congress and attack it this way. And this part of the improper payments portfolio for this program really involves a much more robust data for decision making platform. And so you start getting, you know, a little bit more granularity and specificity in terms of each CFO and government or each program manager saying, this is the stuff that I am targeting as being an elimination opportunity over the next year or two. Hold me accountable for this, rather than just saying, oh, there's $50 billion in improper payments, and the next year there's, you know, the number doesn't seem to change. I want to get a little bit more into the weeds in terms of what do these government agencies think they really can accomplish in the short term. I want to pressure test that and see how they do on those things.
In the case, Danny, where programs are structurally complex, is there a consideration of that as much as there should be ahead of time when programs are built? Is there somebody at the table, either congressionally or in the executive branch or maybe some combination thereof, saying, hey, wait a minute, if you build it that way, it's going to make it a lot more likely that we're going to have to go after improper payments rather than building it in a more simple manner up front?
That's a great point, Francis. And that's where I come back to this concept of a congressional scorecard. This is something that I've talked about before, and we used to think about at OMB. But you, when you consider a piece of legislation, there's a bunch of different ways to kind of evaluate its impact. And in particular, for example, CBO or OMB might say, here's the impact that the legislation will have on the budget bottom line from an outlay perspective or a budget scoring perspective. But there's certainly not a formal moment where you look at the legislation and you score it from a administrative complexity and therefore a likelihood of potential error that's going to be really difficult to root out if the program goes forward in this way. And I think it's something that certainly, you know, needs to be more on the radar screen as policies are formulated and legislation is created.
We only have about a minute left, but what do you think that would look like? Is that just something Congress decides since they formulate the legislation, or is that something the executive branch should be or would want to be involved with?
Well, let me draw on my IRS experience there, because one of the things that people don't understand often about the IRS is that the IRS doesn't get involved in tax policy. They're at the table only to explain when others are debating tax policy what the IRS can effectively administer versus what they would have a challenge administering. So they really take that tax administration focus versus that tax policy. And I think, you know, agencies collectively, especially financial managers and others that are more accountable for improper payments, as agencies are formulating the administration's position on legislation, can really push and say what is administrable or not, and then have a special dedicated look at improper payments as part of the administration challenge of a particular program that's being considered.
Because it seems to me if your former colleagues at OMB are going to be measuring and holding responsible executive branch officials for that, they'd want to be involved with it, Danny. I appreciate your insight. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, Francis.